and gentlemen, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Pennsylvania, and boy, was it a beautiful day today. We broadcast each and every weekday live from 7 to 10 p.m. here on Global Star Radio Network, as well as Blog Talk Radio, and we have live video broadcasts on YouTube. My name is Joe Hagman. I am the co-host, along with my father, Doug Hagman, and we have a fantastic show lined up for you tonight. Folks, don't forget to check our websites and bookmark them, HagmanReport.com and HagmanAndHagman.com. Hagman Report has a lot of news and information, and Hagman & Hagman has show information, and also HomelandSecurityUS.com is my dad's old site that he is revamping. And again, we got a fantastic show for you tonight. First up is a man named Dan Bauman. He has obtained a business degree from Wheaton College and joined the youth with a mission, the YWAM, and moved to Afghanistan as a volunteer worker for an eye hospital where he worked for several years as an administrator. In 1997, he went to visit in Iran to share about the love of Jesus, where he had a friend. Him and a friend were arrested on false charges, which eventually led to having two death sentences on his life. He was a prisoner of Iran and miraculously was released after 9 weeks in the prison after enduring and sustaining torture, and he was granted a vision from Jesus, who got him through this wrenching ordeal. Without any further ado, we're going to bring Dan on. Dan, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Thank you. It's really good to be with you today.
It's great to have you. I hope I didn't miss anything in the introduction.
No, that was great.
Okay. Well, let's jump right into it. You were in Iran doing missionary work, correct?
Yeah, I was there for a two-week trip with a friend, specifically wanting to share about the love of Jesus in different places around the country. And when we left, that's when things changed around and got worse.
Okay. So you were on, you went there and did the missionary work you went there to do, and then you left, and that's when you were arrested. What was the charges? What did you do wrong?
They got us on, both of me and my friend, we were traveling on different passports. I was traveling on a Swiss passport. I'm a dual citizen with Switzerland through my dad, Swiss American. My friend was a South African. Okay. That's how we were able to get, visas. And when we were abducted, we were never told exactly why, but we found out later that there were two death sentences, one for being a missionary and the other for being an American, and that's why we were in prison.
So not only the missionary aspect of this, but also being an American was enough for an arrest and being detained.
Yeah, it was very connected to the fact that I was a dual citizen and the fact that I haven't lived in Switzerland, so they wondered how I could actually have a Swiss passport or have a Swiss father. And yeah, so that's what they associated that with, and then my friend was associated with me in that same scenario.
Okay, well, we're all very interested to hear what it was like in the, as soon as you were captured, you and your friend were put into what, a jail cell?
Yes, it's the main notorious jail of the nation for political prisoners, and we were 2 by 3 yards in private isolated cells, and it was an unlimited amount of time, and there was a toilet and a sink in there. We slept on the floor, and yeah, steel door, and that was my new life.
So you are a missionary, you're in Iran, with a man from another country who's your friend. They detain you. I bet it's confusing. They put you in a cell. You're trying to figure out what's going on. What's some of the first things that happened? When did you start to realize that you were in a really bad situation?
I mean, it was from the very beginning. I ended up being beaten a lot in the very first day I was there by my main interrogator. They never really gave clear instructions on why I was being put in prison. I have lived in that part of the world for many years, but yeah, never encountered a situation like this. And when we were locked in private cells, that's when it got very, very real that this could be a long ordeal. It had no real end in sight. And yet, it was during all this time that God really did amazing things in my heart. Gave me a deeper love more than ever for Iran and for the Iranian people. And he gave me a love for my captors. And he really just rescued me. Even from myself in that place.
Okay. I kind of jumped the gun here when I introduced you. I didn't introduce your website or the name of your book. Folks, Dan Bauman is our guest. His website is danbauman.com. That's danbauman.com. And his book is Cell 58 is the name of the book, Imprisoned in Iran. Which shares the details of God's miracle during this part of his life. And this was written by Dan when he returned to the U.S. And this story is a fascinating story. Prisoner in Iran for being a missionary and sentenced to two death sentences and tortured and suffering for over 9 weeks. So it sets in, Dan, it sets in that you're in jail in a foreign country that is hostile towards Americans and Christians, and what happens next? Take me through some of your story, please.
Well, like I said, I had no idea how long I would be there, and it led to the worst day of my life, and it was there in that place of despair and loneliness that I just thought I might be spending the rest of my life there. And that led towards this crazy day near the beginning of my time a few weeks in where I decided to take my life. And a long story short, there was a sink in the room and I knew if I filled it with water and I put my head into the sink of water, I could tie a towel that they had given me on both sides of the sink. And if I did that, when I would start to gag, I wouldn't be able to jerk my head out. And four times I tried. And every time I tried, I was not able to tie the other end of that towel tight. And I was able to jerk my head out and never able to follow through. And it was out of that I came under great, great shame. I remember falling down just so broken. How could I ever do this? How could I ever try this? And it was there in my despair that I had a vision of Jesus there in my cell, where I literally felt like he was standing in front of me with an eyes of love and blessing and a huge smile. And I felt his hands come underneath me. And then I heard him say these words right to my heart. Dan, I love you. And I will carry you through this time. And from that time until today, I've never had those thoughts again. And that's who God is. He met me at my lowest. He met me in a place where I had no hope at all, and he gave me hope.
Well, that's just a fascinating story. So you, just to summarize here, you were about to attempt suicide, trying to attempt suicide. You couldn't bring yourself to do it, and the desperation was out of the hopelessness of not knowing what was going to happen to you. We could just back up a second. The death sentences that they issued you in Iran, was this some kind of court proceedings? Was this something they just came in this cell and told you they were doing? How'd that work?
Yeah, I actually found it out at a court case that I had, but it wasn't said in an official light in the courtroom. It was just kind of said on the side. I wasn't, sure at all how legit it was, but in my heart, I thought, okay, this just makes it even way more real that I could be there the rest of my life. And yet, in the midst of that, I did have a couple amazing moments where I got to see God's grace on my life even in the midst of that. And one of those came that first time I was in the actual trial. I didn't know I was going to have a trial. One day they brought me in. As they brought me in, it's when I was told about the death sentences, and that's when they had me stand before a big crowd. And they looked at me and they said, "Sir, this is your last chance to speak. And today I want you to tell us why you came to Iran." And I would love to tell you I wasn't afraid. No, I was really afraid. I was scared, and I remember that day I just started shaking. And then that scripture came to my mind, which says, "Do not be afraid when you're called before the authorities, for at that time I'll give you the words to say." And as I stood there, out of my mouth came these simple words, "Sir, I came to Iran today to tell you about Jesus Christ." When I said that, I thought, "Oh my God, what did I say?" But at that same moment, I felt strength come into my heart. And I felt like I knew why God had sent me there. And something inside was greater than my fear. Fear was real. But it was at that moment that I sensed the power of God was even more real. And I ended up preaching over half an hour. And I looked at the audience, I looked at everybody and said, "I came here to tell you about Jesus. I want you all to know who Jesus is." And this strength came over me, and I got to share about the love of Jesus for them for over half an hour while I was there.
Wow. That's amazing. So I want to make sure we don't skip over anything. I'm going to back up. So you're in prison for a few weeks in Iran with death sentences. You feel that it's hopeless. Even with your faith, you're just, I can imagine being afraid of the unknown, afraid of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Did you hear any news reports where there's anybody from America, ambassadors, trying to plead your case?
In the first 5 weeks, I had zero contact with the outside world. I didn't know if anyone knew I was in prison, didn't know if anyone was trying to help me get out. And so, yeah, it was just that just added to the despair. And it was then in that place of despair, and in the second week is when I went to the worst place of my life in that suicide attempt. And it was a couple weeks after that when I had this crazy switch when I got to share before the courthouse about who Jesus is.
And back to the vision or the appearance that Jesus, you had with Jesus, you're in a cell, you're feeling hopeless. You couldn't go through a suicide, and as you said, you're at your lowest point. What was going through your mind right before this happened, this vision happened?
I mean, in my heart of hearts, I've struggled with fear a lot throughout my life, and there it was like fear kind of took over. Fear, despair, hopelessness. And the reality that I could spend the rest of my life there, that I really had no hope, that my life was doomed to this place, fear just took over. And it was in that place of despair that I started to look for a way to actually end my life. And that's when those thoughts came about the sink and the actual ways to actually carry that out. And yet, as I started to do it, I couldn't do it. Like, I couldn't do that final tying of the knot tight. But it was after those four crazy times of trying this that I was able to jerk my head out. And as I jerked my head out, it was when God met me there in that place. In the midst of my pain, in the midst of my insecurity, my fears, God was still with me. And He still loved me, and He still had a plan for my life.
So at that moment, all the fear, uncertainty, and chaos went away, and you knew exactly what it was?
No, it didn't all go away. I just found out that the love of God was greater, that God was still greater even than my fear, even than my insecurity. Yes, I still had my doubts, but any thought of suicide, any thought of actually taking my life disappeared because I was overwhelmed by a greater force the love of God, which I obviously had known in my life, it's much greater than I'd ever dreamed.
That's amazing. That is amazing. So you have this vision and encounter with Jesus. You then, what's the very next thing that happens? What do you do, or does somebody at some point come to you and you explain this, or how did you get this across where you were in prison?
I just continued with my daily life. From that point on, peace grew in my heart. Joy had greater moments in my heart. The despair of thinking I might be there the rest of my life didn't overtake my heart anymore. And I just started, just to find greater peace. I continued with my routines that, I had interrogations, I had showers, I had a lot of time just to sit there, and it was like the next few weeks of just living there that led to the courtroom. And it was at the courtroom where I had that expression of, just sharing my faith with others and seeing the love of God go beyond just me and go out to them.
Okay. So after this happens, you started becoming friends with the guards?
Yes, and that was another amazing thing that happened in my life.
Okay. Can you get into that with us?
Sure, yeah. There's these moments in life where you really sense and feel what God is doing, but then there are other moments in life where it's actually not just a moment, but it's a whole longer deal. And this was a situation that happened on the very first day I was interrogated. And that was the day when I started to get beaten. And it turns out I was beaten every day for the first few weeks, but it was always by the same guy, and I called him my interrogator. And he hit me for no reason, and it was just part of the ordeal, no explanation. And yet, it was on that first day of getting beaten, my first day of incarceration, when I felt like God asked me the simple question, Dan, I want to teach you today how to love your enemies. I remember when I felt that in my heart, I'm like, this is not a good time. Like, there was nothing in my heart to want to learn that. But it kept coming again and again, this sense of that God wanted to teach me to love his enemy. And when I finally accepted that and say, okay, God, I don't know how to love this man, but please show me. And it was at that moment that I got a glimpse of God's love for this man. That no matter what I was thinking about myself, at that moment, God was loving that man, even though that man couldn't see it. And I began to see that the love of God for that man was real, even though that man never acknowledged it. So God changed my heart from that moment. And I kept saying, God, change it. Make me more like you. And again, it's all glory to Jesus. But over time, I just started to love this man, pray for this man, bless this man. I had no idea if the beatings would ever stop. And I'll never forget the last day I saw him. I had no idea it would be the last day I'd see him. But they take me into the interrogation room. And every time I stood before him, I would shake, thinking he would start beating me. But on that day, something happened. And all I can say is the grace of God. And I looked at him on that day and said, sir, if I'm going to see you every day the rest of my life, let's become friends. He looked at me and said, that's impossible. Never. We will never be friends. I'm like, sir, we can start by exchanging names. That was never done. I never had heard his name. That wasn't allowed. He had never called me by my name because my name was 58, because that was the number of my cell. And as I kept sharing, the boldness of God kept rising up within me. And I looked at him again, and I stuck out my hand, and I said, sir, today things change. Let's be friends, and let's exchange names. As I did that, I held out my hand, and he froze. Then he started to look around. Then he started to shake. As he started to shake, he took his right hand out of his pocket and reached towards me, and he shook my hand. As he shook my hand, he started to shake, and tears started to come down his face. And he wouldn't let go. And after about 5 minutes, he let go with his hands, and he wiped the tears from his eyes. And he looked at me, and he said, "Dan, my name is Razak, and I would love to be your friend." And I knew at that moment that there was no heart-to-heart for Jesus. And I knew that God had changed that man's heart.
Wow, that's awesome. And at that point, did you feel some relief that that you were about to leave, but you at least befriended somebody and who was one of your captors, I guess you could say?
Yeah, you know, and I was just so amazed at the love of God, even for my greatest enemy at that point, was real and it was strong, and that God had helped me to love him, the man who had hit me, and I was just overwhelmed that the love of God can be that strong, even to our worst enemies. And he even made a little promise at the very end. He said, "I can't get you out of this prison, but within the prison I have some authority. Would you like anything in the prison?" And I remember saying to him, "Yeah, I'd like a bigger cell." He's like, "Well, let me speak to the guards who run the night shift, and let's see what we can do." And from that day until the rest of my time incarceration, I never saw that man again. But that night, the night guards came to my room and said, "Sir, we have an order to move you to a bigger cell." And I knew that God had changed that man's heart to tell them to move me to a bigger cell.
So you say you didn't see that man again. Are you sure it was even in a guard there?
I mean, that night, the other night guards there, my interrogator again started him before I was even in prison. It was the very first day of my meeting, so I knew he had a bit of an official stance coming in to be my interrogator from the outside. And then, yeah, I didn't have hardly any relationship with guards, so to speak, because I was in isolation. But yeah, I was just so amazed that my interrogator's heart had changed and become my friend at the end.
Well, that's fantastic. And all this that you went through, I'm sure, you know, was a life-changing experience. If we can, let's talk a little bit about the church. Well, no, first let's go back to, so you befriended the guard and you get a bigger cell. What happens? How do you get released? How do you go from the time you get the cell, the bigger cell, to being released?
I continued in that place, not knowing one day to the next how long I would be there. And my release all came on a very specific, like, 24-hour deal. And it was in the beginning of that last day, which I had no idea would be my last day. But they had me on a bus and introduced me to a fellow American. And I looked at him, he was African-American from Louisiana, and I remember looking at him going, "Oh my gosh, do you speak English?" He's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "I had no idea there was other Americans here." He goes, "Yeah." And I'm like, "How long have you been here?" He said, 15 months. And I'm like, "Why?" And he goes, "I don't know." And I said, "Yeah, I've been here many weeks, and I don't know either." And I've never seen that man again since. I do know he got out of prison. He got out 1 or 2 months after I did. But I'll never forget that night as I sat in my cell realizing I'd met a fellow American. He'd been there 15 months, and they really hit me that I might be there at least 15 months. Like, what if I was there for 5 years? What if they never told me anything and I just sat there for the rest of my life? And that night, all this stuff went through my heart. And I'll never forget, it was late into that night that I finally looked up to God and said, "God, I don't understand. I don't understand why this is happening. I don't understand why I would spend the rest of my life here. But I made you the Lord of my life before, and I do it again now. I don't need to understand everything. You just have your way." And as I said that, this peace and joy came into my heart again. And little did I know that just 3 hours after that, I would get one of the greatest surprises of my entire life. They came to my cell. They brought me out to a room. They made me get dressed. And I kept thinking, why am I getting dressed? I had never seen my clothes in many weeks. My only thought was it might be my day of execution, because I heard people being killed in there every day. As I got dressed, they put me in a car. They took me to the courthouse, but this time not to the courtroom, this time to a normal office. As I sat in this office, that's when this man stood up. I found out later that he was the head judge of all the courts of Iran. And it was there that he said this. He said, today, because of our friendship with Switzerland, the Swiss ambassador was sitting in the room. The Swiss embassy, which is in Tehran, had been working on my release. And he said, because of our friendship with them, we choose to release Dan Bauman, and he's a free man.
Wow.
And I became a free man.
That's awesome. Dan, we're up against the break. Just hold on 1 minute. A few minutes, we'll be back after these short messages. Folks, our guest is Dan Bauman. His website is danbauman.com. DanBauman. His books, Cell 58, as well as his most recent book, A Fresh Look at Fear. When we come back, we're going to get into these books and where to get them, and talk about, you know, the messages that are in there that are important. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back. In a thrilling series of novels, T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of three families who struggle to maintain normal lives in a world where conspiracy theory and Bible prophecy collide. T.C. Joseph's viewpoint of alternative history and understanding of prophetic events will change your view of the world and the events on our horizon. Kirkus Review states, readers of end times fiction will be hard-pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this. Extremely readable and fast-paced, Blue Week Reviews boldly states, fans of Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series and Tom Parada's The Leftovers will find this thought-provoking series absolutely riveting. Order your copies of T.C. Joseph's This Generation series from Amazon.com. Book 1, Precipice. Book 2, Pentecost. And Book 3, Penance.
In these uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
We'll be right back.
and welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Our guest this segment is Dan Bauman. That is also his website, danbauman.com, D-A-N-B-A-U-M-A-N-N. And he's got a few books, Cell 58, which is the book that he wrote about being imprisoned in Iran, and his most recent book, A Fresh Look at Fear. And we're going to get into this a little bit, Dan. So you were given your clothes right before the end of the segment. You were telling the story about your release, where you weren't sure what was going on. You were given clothes. You weren't sure if it was your execution. I'm sure you weren't thinking that you were going to be released, but there you are being released. And you get out. What happens after that? You get released. You get to come right home.
Well, the Swiss ambassador was there, and he got me to his house. They had to find my passport, which was in a random office somewhere. They had to give me flights, and I was able 3 days later to actually get a flight, out of the nation. And that's when I knew that I was really, really free. And I was in Switzerland with family and friends for a few days, and then I got to come back to America and, continue on with my life.
Well, that's fantastic. Speaking of Iran and the church, the Christian church in Iran, we have a few guests who are authors who have written books about Iran and the growing Christian population there. Can you share any insight as to the religious culture inside of Iran?
You know, again, my experiences were from years ago, and I don't know that much. I'm with those that know that there's so many exciting good things happening right now. The numbers are 2 to 7 million followers of Jesus. It's by far the most growing church in the Middle East. And yet, amidst, some challenges for sure at the government level, and, there's levels of strict Islam both in the government and in many situations across the nation. But the church is growing, and it's mostly house churches, very quietly growing, but it is growing, and the stories keep growing on how people are finding and discovering God.
Wow, that's amazing. If we can, let's get into your books. You have you've written a number of books. Will you tell us what they are, and from Cell 58 to the most recent one, A Fresh Look at Fear, and where folks can get those, and what are some of the teasers you could give us to get people to, the story from Iran. On Cell 58 book, you don't need any teasers. You just laid that out. But A Fresh Look at Fear.
Well, thank you. Yeah, no, my Cell 58 book is simply a 6-month story of before I went into Iran for the visit, the incarceration, and how God got me out. A lot of details I've written from a very raw, real place of my struggles as well as the victories God gave me. As that came out and as I wrote a book about it, it opened doors for teaching. And over the years, I've traveled all over the world and met many, many people who struggled with fear. And fear has been one of my main struggles, How do you get over fear and how to deal with fear? And over the last few years, I felt a challenge to write a book on some of the things I'm learning about how to deal with fear. And basically, it's this, that if we look at fear and the fears that we're faced with, is that something that until it's gone, I can't go forward with life? But what I'm discovering that Jesus is so big and so good that even in the midst of struggles with fear, we can still do what God wants. We can still look at Jesus. And it truly is that the love of God is the greatest victory over fear. It's not our ability to kind of, do it internally, but it's basically the love of God. And it's a real pointing of a book towards how good God is, even in the midst of the fears that we face.
Amen. And people can get those books on your website, on Amazon?
Yeah, mostly at Amazon.com is the best way and the easiest way for people to get them.
All right. Well, Dan, I want to thank you for joining us. Again, Dan Bauman is our guest, B-A-U-M-A-N-N, danbauman.com, and his website as well as Amazon. You can get his books, from his imprisonment story in Iran, Cell 58, to A Fresh Look at Fear. Anything else before we let you go, Dan?
I'm just so grateful for, yeah, the chance to be with you. Thankful for a chance to share my heart. And yeah, that no matter what people are going through in life, that Jesus is bigger and he's really good, even whatever is going on.
Amen. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Dan, and we look forward to talking with you in the future. I look forward to reading your book. And we wish you the best.
Thank you so much. Great to be with y'all.
Great to have you. You have a great night.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Again, folks, that was Dan Bauman. DanBauman.com is the website. And his books are available not only on his website, but on Amazon also. And you can do the Kindle thing and go check them out if you like this story. Talk about being afraid. Talk about being fearful. You find yourself in a prison in Iran, sentenced to death, on the brink of suicide. And just a few weeks after that, due to prayers and intervention from the Lord, you're walking out of that prison. And sadly, we still see today where American ministers and pastors continue to be imprisoned in Iran and continue to be held prisoner for their missionary work, for their belief in Jesus. And this has been an ongoing battle, you know, with these nations. But I think it's Bill Salas who wrote his book. His last book talked about the huge increase in the Christian popularity in Iran, a huge increase of Christianity in Iran. And that's something that, you know, we'll have to pray that that continues. Before we have a little bit of time before we get to the end of this hour, we're going to fill in some news here. I want to give you a couple quick updates today. Earlier, my dad was on InfoWars.
Yes, I was.
An hour and 15 minutes.
Did you catch it? Come on, guys.
It's already up on the Alex Jones Show YouTube channel as a segmented interview. So if you did miss it and only want to watch that interview, go to YouTube and go to Alex Jones' channel and you can find that video.
Here's the thing what we need. We need people to go off and say, you know what? Send an email. Say, great interview. Whoa, have him back on.
Okay.
Okay. I want to thank Joe, my son, for stepping up, filling in for me here a little bit. I'll tell you what, I was exhausted. Yeah, tired. But anyway, thank you for stepping in and doing the interview. That was a fascinating interview, by the way. So, anyway. But here's the thing, Joe. Alex Jones,
also,
go ahead. Didn't mean to interrupt.
Tonight, Steve Quayle and Timothy Alberino will be on Coast to Coast for a few hours. So, Coast to Coast for a few hours with Steve Quayle and Timothy Alberino.
But see, that's not the real time. They dial their clocks back. So it's not like, you know, 1 a.m. Okay. So it's okay. But yeah, Steve Quayle and Tim Alberino. You're right on InfoWars.
Got a question for you.
No.
I accidentally on the dashboard hit clear cache on the website. Did I screw something?
I don't know. No.
Okay.
No.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Okay.
Why? Logged out, huh?
No, I just hit it. No, it looks fine.
Okay.
Just wasn't sure what I did.
I did that for him. Anyway, it's actually a button there that no worries. Here's the deal, and I just want to reiterate what I said with InfoWars. Look, you know, with all the talk and everything, at the epicenter of course, as we said last night, at the epicenter of the Russian narrative, of course, is CrowdStrike. CrowdStrike is the company that looked into the hacking of the DNC staffers, DNC and Wasserman Schultz says, you guys can't see to the FBI. You can't see our servers. Nope. So we're going on the so-called what would you call it? The word of CrowdStrike that Russians hacked the server. Look, they never turned over anything. So then, of course, that narrative carried over into the Russian collusion with Donald Trump. Well, let's go back, let's go with the Russian collusion with Donald Trump and Donald Trump's alleged, his trying to get the President Donald Trump. President Donald Trump trying to get Comey not to you know, advance on the investigation. Here's the thing. If the memo that he did allegedly contemporaneously is correct, if we take Comey at face and they say, yep, he did it. Here's a memo he wrote to file. If he put that in a drawer somewhere for 3 months, well, technically, I suppose one could accuse him of being in violation of 18 U.S.C. Section 4, which is misprision of felony, because that's a felonious act that you know you must immediately report that to the the Attorney General's office, the Office of the Attorney General, among others. But that's what you got to do, and he didn't do that. Why not? Why 3 months later does he bring this memo up?
Yeah.
That's cagey to me.
3 months later.
Yeah, that's cagey to me. So, and look, Joe and I do this as a matter of routine. We will have a conversation. If we have a conversation with somebody that's important, significant, and that's why I tell people, put it in an email, and that way I develop an audit trail. And not only does this help me remember, but I've got a timestamp on that email. So if I fail to act on it, or if I, whatever, it's me, or it's documentation, but, if somebody admitted to me that, or if I admitted to myself that I just, there's a felony here, potential felony.
Well, you know, it's not even that. It's not even that the Comey allegedly sat on that information. It's also that he testified under oath that there was absolutely no interference whatsoever,
right,
by anybody. And he said, oh, of course, I would say it if there was. And then what, a week and a half, 2 weeks later, he comes back out and, you know, all of a sudden has some memo that he drafted himself after the fact that he could have written anything on it. I mean, that'd be like me sitting here, say I had a conversation with Tech Eric on the phone earlier today. I could take a piece of paper and say, you know, Eric said I should, you know,
yeah, but you
break his leg. And then what kind of proof is that when you get to court?
When you email to yourself and or you have a system, the FBI does have a system that does have.
There has to be some verification.
There is. It built into the FBI.
How can they verify what Trump said to Comey based on what Comey wrote down on a piece of paper after the meeting?
I know. That's a problem. But in general, if you would take this before a grand jury, for example, or a court, they look at this, and I've seen this happen where the contemporaneous notes of law enforcement officers are almost sacrosanct in that venue. They hold a lot of weight. So if he's before a congressional or Senate committee, and I've been in the court, in the state court level, once I think in the federal court level, to see this take place where they'll look at it and say, okay, we believe you based on your contemporaneous notes. But generally speaking, the FBI's got almost like a dictaphone verification system. It used to be, boy, am I dating myself, the dictaphone thing. But yes, you're right. Because you could do it now and say, well, you know, I wrote this back 3 months ago. Well, no. There are verification methods of verification to do that.
And if you take a look at how this all started, what the, you know, oh, the obstruction charge. Can you get obstruction of justice charges for, say he did interfere.
Yeah.
But interfere with what? An investigation that has produced no evidence in over 8 to 10 months? Never has produced evidence? There's not even an investigation?
This is the
Trump-Russia stuff?
This is a...
Based on a lie. The Flynn stuff. What are they investigating with Flynn? He was acting as a foreign agent, being paid to act as a foreign agent with Turkey.
Right.
He had a conversation...
What about the $900,000 to Hillary Clinton? What about the
$6.5 trillion missing money? I mean, where was Comey on that? See, it's convenient to have somebody come out, and we see this just piling on Trump. They're looking for an impeachment. They've been since the election, since the moment they found out Hillary Clinton wasn't going to win, they have been plotting and devising plans to try to not just catch Trump slipping up, but to lie and confuse and manipulate public opinion through lies and disinformation. And sadly, it's working to some degree, but this is where, you know, we have to, if you believe in Trump and more importantly, you believe in the agenda, I say, everybody write their congressman and tell them, if you do not stand up for Trump, we will be against you forever.
Well, and there's a fivefold assault against Donald Trump right now. The media, of course, the corporate media is against them 100%, and they're agents of the communists embedded within the government. You have to understand how the communists got there, of course, after World War II. Understand your history, folks. This is why it's not taught in schools anymore, because if you understand your history, then you will understand how we are being systematically disassembled from within. So the media is against Donald Trump. You've got the Democrats, of course, which are really not Democrats at all. By any historical standards, they're communists. That's it, period. They're communists. You got Al Green on the House Senate floor, whatever, yelling, you know, we need an impeachment. Okay, that guy is part of the Black Caucus, which has its roots as well into, and not the singer, but anyway, he's got his roots, that's got the roots into the communist, state, if you will, the deep state. The selective leaks are coming from the deep state, of which the intelligence agencies and the industry is part of. The other aspect, the Never Trumpers, don't forget those people. Do not forget those people. Yep. National Review and the Weekly Standard, both publications, Never Trumpers, as far as I'm concerned, they're sellouts. They're mm-hmm. minions for the morons out there walking around that need to be that really need to buy a brain. The establishment Republicans, those people who are, you know, Priebus, Paul Ryan, McCain, Graham, that queer, and my personal opinion. And then you've got the randoms. The randoms out there are just people who are say they're conservative, but are actually communist nut jobs. You know, a few, in my personal opinion, psychopaths walking around there that are ambulatory psychopaths, okay, functioning schizophrenics.
Yeah, and with all this coverage, with all these, and you got to watch the news, because I've been noticing this more and more recently, it's more and more frequent, when you just mentioned Lindsey Graham. I saw an article earlier, Lindsey Graham, no collusion between Trump and Russia. Then I see an article over here that says, Lindsey Graham, Russian probe seems to be a criminal investigation, and then, you know, Lindsey Graham, that we need to investigate Trump.
Hey, fire off a couple of missiles in Syria.
The same interview, people are taking, or at least somebody's taking something out of context, because it can't be both. He can't say there's nothing there and then say it's a criminal investigation and investigate Trump.
Look, I did say this. Picture your picture. Did I interrupt you?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Picture your psycho girlfriend or your psycho boyfriend or your psycho wife or psycho husband, psycho boss even. The tech Eric. Okay, I'll deal with you later.
Good one, Eric.
But picture that, right? Looking at the spouse, the other. Well, if I can't have him or her, ain't nobody gonna have him. So I'm gonna, you know, cut him up, put him in the pot, have him for. Let's make stew. I mean, it's that ridiculous. That's what they're doing to our country. If we can't have this country, we're gonna take it all down, tear it all mm-hmm. down, burn it to the ground. And look, this will be the summer of rage. I tell you, this will be, okay? And no one...
Regardless what happens with Trump.
Man, regardless. They're just itching to loot a Walmart. People are, that is. String sentences. Memo to self. Yeah. Look, it's going to be the summer of rage, and it's going to make... what's going on in other countries, including Venezuela, look like a walk in the park. Paul Joseph Watson did a video that I have to tip the hat to,
mm-hmm.
As well. And you know, and I go back. One of the most landmines, I believe, are the so-called conservatives and Christians who are out there just beating the war drums against Donald Trump, who say they're conservatives, but they're not. And I really have a real problem with those people, because those are the people who come after us. Those are the people who come after our sponsors. Those are the people who come after our revenue, come after our operations, come after our people, and frankly, come after us personally as well as professionally. And that's what they're doing to the supporters of Donald Trump. That's what they're doing to this country. When you look at everything flat out, I truly believe this to be the case, 99% of this war that's taking place is a war of perception. Not facts, but perception. And they're managing the perception. And you know what? If we follow it, if we fall for that, shame on us. So.
No, you're absolutely right. And, one second. So we're going to be continuing to cover the we think one of the most important stories in the news this week is Seth Rich. And we're going to have an update tomorrow in the first half hour, an exclusive update that should be bringing some interesting new information, first-hand information, as to what might have happened, or at least an idea of what's going on with that. And it's getting crazy. You know, we see, looking at the headlines, I don't know where you want to go in the last few minutes of the segment, but we can talk about Donald Trump. We can talk about the deep state. We can talk about
this. Let me just say one thing, if I can.
Sure.
Okay. I just got an email. People are saying, you know, that Alex Jones is a sellout, or Alex Jones is this, or Alex Jones is that. It's a couple of things. In fact, it's a 3-part email. So I kind of stunned.
Yeah, we get those.
Let me tell you something. You got no idea. To the senator, to Don S., you got no idea what the hell you're talking about. None whatsoever. All right? You don't have enough. You don't have the balls Alex Jones has. You have no idea the backstory. And I'm sick and tired of people tearing other conservative people who are trying to do the people who are trying to expose the evil in this world. I'm sick and tired of you people out there ripping them down. If you're listening to me and that's the way you feel, stop listening to us. Go listen to Rachel Maddow. Go suck on the teat of progressive communism. Get your poison Kool-Aid milk, if there is any there. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of you people, not you, the audience, but the people like this.
People who don't have anything to say.
You eunuch. You're a eunuch, and you know it. You don't have any balls, because if you did, you'd be out there fighting in the trenches yourself. But you couldn't carry his water. You couldn't wash his car. You couldn't shine his shoes. Oh wait, I'm gonna be called a racist now, right? I'm sure somewhere in there is a racist statement.
You can't wash his car, you can't shine his shoes.
What's
racist
mind.
About that?
Oh, I guess you gotta be my age to understand that. Okay. So, I'm gonna tell you something. If your life consists of nothing but tearing other people down, if you dedicate your blogs to nothing but tearing other people down, you are good for nothing. You're good for nothing. That's what you are, good for nothing. You put your guts on the line. You put your butt on the line. You put your neck on the line. You say, I'm going to fight. You go and appear on different shows. You put your name out there. You put your face out there. And you say, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready to take on this tyrannical government, as allowed in our Constitution. That's what you've got to do. You've got to do, but no, you know what? You're sitting back there and you think you got keyboard muscles like beer muscles. You're nothing but a punk. And if you're a woman, you're nothing but, and hey, biblically, you know where it's going with that. I'm going to stop. Joe just threw something at me and I.
You worry me sometimes.
I worry myself sometimes. Eric going, hey, get the button. Todd's going, oh gosh, you know. I love Todd.
No, really, there is no time to just
No, let's come on,
people.
Man. Let's get on the same team, right? Come on, let's get together. Now is the time. You're right. Now is the time we got to get together. We have to fight together, and we should be supporting one another. We should be saying, you know what? We might have our differences, but you know, we got a common enemy. That's what they're doing. So stop it. Hang on. This is the delete button. Done. Deleted. Okay, we can move on now.
All right. As we are approaching the break in just a few minutes, just a quick rundown. I don't know how many people saw this. Sherrod David Clark says he's joining the DHS. A lot of people felt that Clark should have been appointed to a position inside Trump's cabinet, and I don't know if he would have taken it or not, but he's a constitutional sheriff out of Milwaukee, I believe, and he is going to be joining the DHS, which is interesting news. It's a step in the right direction. And then Trump had a press conference today where he said he's the victim of a witch hunt, and that is very true. And you know, one thing, when we see all this this division, and you know, what we were just talking about, there definitely is no room for that when you have the, not the president, but the agenda. that nobody else is going to continue to move forward as Trump is. At least nobody wanted to, nobody had the guts to do it and step up and try to do it except him. We have to be really careful at throwing arrows against each other. And I mean, how many people are in the world? 7 billion people? How many people control those 7 billion people? Maybe 2 to 10,000? All that energy all the other billions of people should be focused on those 10,000 people. You shouldn't have the 10,000 people being able to divide, you know, the people in America, the 350 million into two groups. What, 3,000-4,000 people in America that run the show? Let's focus our energy there.
Right on. And that's kind of what I was trying to say.
Then after we take care of all that, if you guys want to still tear each other up, well, we can do that.
Yeah.
But let's fix our front yard first.
There you go. Curb appeal. Trim the edges.
No, it is crazy to see all these people trying to take swipes and the politicizing and using these false, you know, news stories to try to further their career or, you know, get a jab in on Trump or whatever it is. It's all lies. It's all lies. Have the discernment to be able to go through the news and figure out for yourself what's going on without having to rely on a newscaster or even us or anybody on TV and alternative media or mainstream. We should be getting to a point with the news that people are able to figure out what's what just by reading a misleading headline. Because it's become pretty clear to us. Folks, you're listening to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We will be right back with Mr. Edward Cage. Mr. Edward Cage, after these short messages. Don't go anywhere.
Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. What Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right? You need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bing, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greenovative.com, that's greenovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's smokeless, fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com, PreciousTimberProfits.com.